The experiences and views shared in this podcast are personal and meant for education and entertainment only. Please remember these episodes are never intended to replace the guidance and advice of your child's licensed healthcare provider. You're listening to the Extra to Love podcast, brought to you by Extra to Love, a nonprofit serving families of people with trisomy 13 to 18, with your host, Amber Scuderi. Welcome back to the Extra to Love podcast. My name is Amber. I am your host, and I'm joined with me today is Emma, my co-host.
Hello, hello.
And this is part two of mini series with Charity Nelson and her life with Maggie. Now, Charity, you are a woman of many hats, based on social media at least. You have a pageant lifestyle, you run businesses, you have your own organization, you're writing a book. When do you sleep? How do you do it all? What is your current passion right now?
Well, I definitely don't sleep naturally as a mom to three kids, one of which is still a baby and the other is a child with severe special needs, but I don't know how I do it. Most days I am just trying to get to the end of the day. I guess I mostly, you know, social media can be so deceiving sometimes. I have done a lot. I've attempted a lot of things. I've done a lot of things, but I also have ADHD, probably undiagnosed. It's so naturally, I love to jump. I just love
same.
To jump.
I know. It just comes. Also undiagnosed, but fairly certain.
Yeah. I almost feel like it is also like just a mom thing. You know, as you're a mom, you want to fill sort of that, I don't want to call it a void because it sounds so negative, but you find projects that kind of keep you buzzing and going and helps you push through those tough first few years as a mom. And that's me. That's what I've done from the beginning. I get an idea and I run for it. So the pageant thing was definitely a whole learning experience. Had never done pageants before. It just kind of fell in my lap. I believe at the time I was not ready for it, but it taught me a lot. And I guess one of the biggest things I want to talk about is self-care. And I know there's that can mean so many different things for so many different people, and it can be so hard to find time for that self-care. But that has been my biggest journey this year of, you know, trying to find balance in my crazy life and prioritize my mental health and my physical health more.
Does eating an unhealthy amount of candy count as self-care? Yeah. I'm kidding. I don't eat that much candy. That's not my self-care. Well, I was going to have self-care and then I injured myself. But okay, so what are you doing for self-care? Because I do want you to dive into your book, because you do have that on your tagline for Instagram, at least. I feel like that would be, I don't know, highlight something.
Well, and I just remembered as we were talking about the things that you are doing, I also remembered that you've recently been talking about a greenhouse that you're doing in your backyard. So you have lots of exciting...
Oh gosh, I'm not even sure where to begin. I will kind of come back to the self-care thing. I feel like that's been since the start of this year. I don't know what hit me. I think it was after having my third baby. I knew I was going to struggle. I naturally have postpartum depression after my kids. It's such a common thing for us moms because it's so hard to make that big adjustment. And it was especially hard because we were going from Maggie to another child. And so the beginning of this year, I just like hit a wall and I said, I need to do something. And so I started prioritizing dreams that I've had for a long time that I've never given time to, because naturally being a mom just takes up so much of your time. And I've always wanted to write a book. I've been writing for over a decade, and this was one of my biggest dreams. And I told myself it is happening this year. Nothing's going to stop me. So I had to actually take like a step back and look at all the things that I have on my plate. And I really had to figure out kind of what is most important and what's not. So I was actually going to run for the pageant again this year, but I decided to back out after a couple months because that was just one of those things that I realized, you know what? I can't do it all. And this is one of those things I can't do. And it's been hard. It's been hard as someone like with undiagnosed ADHD. And when I get crazy ideas, I just want to do it all. But I've had to force myself to buckle down and just keep a tight knit list of what's most important. So my mental health, my husband, my children, and like one or two goals, which is writing my book this year. And yeah, the greenhouse was kind of one of those things I threw in there. I haven't been working on it recently. It was just one of those things that I don't even know really what to say about that.
I'm so like that too. I get, you know, some idea in my head and I am gung-ho about it for about 2 to 6 weeks. And then after that time period, I am like, no, I don't care about it and I don't want anything to do with it again. So I have a lot of started hobbies and started projects that don't go to completion. I know from my life that in order to do really anything with a kid, well, with kids in general, but then especially with kids who have needs that are met differently and kind of sometimes takes somebody who knows what they're doing to take care of your child, especially our kids that have trachs. Who are your go-to people? Who's your village? Do you use a lot of nursing? Do you have family or friends who, you know, are trained to take care of Maggie? Or who are your people that help you do something other than just be mom taking care of Maggie all the time?
Yeah, I'm so blessed to have all of my family within 10 to 15 minutes of me, actually. All three of my older sisters live near me. My mom lives close by, and Robbie's mom also lives in the same city. So we are super, super lucky.
That's amazing.
I know. I have fully recognized how blessed I am to have that. So they are definitely like my number one go-tos for babysitters because they're the only ones I would ever trust. But it's so hard though, because Maggie, gosh, like you can have a babysitter, but for someone who knows how to, for example, if like an emergency, life-saving emergency were to happen, which it could easily happen with a child like Maggie, it's hard to like have a normal babysitter versus someone who knows how to respond in that kind of a situation. So
right.
It's definitely like a constant struggle. Recently though, my sister has taken it upon herself to learn more about Maggie's trach and Maggie's cares. And she's done quite a few trach changes. And that to me has meant more than anything in the world, because for someone to take that initiative on, you can try and tell your family to, hey, you should come and learn so I can, you know, you can babysit Maggie for me. But it's just one of those things that is so hard if like Robbie and I ever were to go on a date night or want to leave for a couple hours. It's that constant fear and anxiety that sits with me when we leave the house and leave her with somebody. But we've tried nursing a few times. Not for me. I felt like I needed the nurse for a season. And then once I was able to do it all myself, I let them go because I like to do it on my own. That's just how I operate best. I don't like when people are in my house and...
I could not agree more.
Yeah. And a part of me feels like if I'm not doing it, I'm going to miss something. Yes. And like, I'm so in tune with any minute changes with her that it would stress me out.
For a lot of people, nursing is absolutely crucial. Like they can't function without it and they love the help. But I fall kind of more in your camp. Like I want to do it myself and I just don't really want to have extra people in my house all the time, you know, so I can totally relate to that. And I love what you said about your sister, how it's just meant so much to you, because I think that would mean so much to me too, for somebody to just volunteer and just take the initiative and just say, I really want to learn. Even if you'd never get to the point where you could fully just leave them alone and leave the house, just somebody being interested enough and seeing that it takes some training and wanting to do that to try and help you out is such a great way to love a friend or a family member like us.
Yes.
Which I'm that person that's like, yeah, you can come help me, but come sit with her while I'm, I don't know if it's like, I don't trust people. I don't want to miss something. And I'm trying to be more diligent about taking that time and being okay with going places, because I know that like my marriage needs it and stuff, or like just as an adult, we need that time. And so I'm slowly trying to, but like you said, it doesn't go without that worry. Plus I just don't like people in my space.
I feel that so deeply. It's so hard for moms to ask for help. My husband thinks it's so simple. He's like, just ask for help. And I'm like, you just don't understand. It's not that simple. And especially as a special needs parent, it's even more complicated, because I've had people offer like, hey, if you ever need help, you know, they always, whenever they see Maggie, they're like, oh, if you need help, just like, I can come watch the kids, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking in my head, well, no, I will never ask you to do that, but thank you so much for offering. It's definitely a constant battle of, do I want to take on all of this responsibility because I like to be in control of it, even though at the end of each day it weighs on me so much, or can I be vulnerable and just ask for help?
Yeah. I get that. I struggle with that too a lot. Okay, so one of the really cool things that I noticed on social media that you guys recently did was that you got to go to Disney. And so there's a lot of really
cool... second time they've done Disney World and Disneyland, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Just Disneyland twice. Yeah.
Disneyland twice. Okay. Sorry. I am mistaken, but they have done it twice.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's cool. So there's all these social media accounts that, you know, give you all these Disney hacks and stuff. So whenever you take a medically complex child, what are your really fun, cool tips and tricks for making that happen and making that an enjoyable experience for them too?
Yeah. Preparation is key, number one, but also not overcomplicating things and really just trying to simplify. And, you know, you can pack everything as possible for any type of little circumstance or emergency. But after 3 years of doing this walk with Maggie, where she just comes with so much equipment, I feel like we've really come down with the tight-knit system that is just really normal and natural to us. But people might look at it as super complicated, but it's not. Like, in our mind, in our eyes, it's just the way it is. So it's completely possible to take your trach and special needs child to Disneyland. I will say that the very first time we went, Maggie was a little over a year old, and her G-tube came out right in the middle of California Adventure.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. Of course. Of course. This just happened to Amber the other day, and not in the middle of, you know, Disneyland, but in an inopportune time where she was not prepared for it. And me and one of our nurses, we were talking about how it seems like that stuff always happens in the middle of a parking lot when it's 110 degrees outside in a torrential downpour. Everything goes wrong whenever it's like the least opportune time for something to go wrong.
I know. And it never happened before. So of all the times, why would it happen then? I just don't understand. The funny thing was that she thought it was hilarious. She didn't even cry. Thankfully, I had what I needed, and this proved to me that, you know, you should pack for every little circumstance, because you never know what could happen, but you shouldn't feel like you have to overcomplicate things. And that, you know, that natural anxiety can be very normal in the beginning of this kind of journey, but over time, it just gets easier and it just becomes your normal. So yeah, Maggie's been on, and when we say we take her to Disneyland, we actually take her on the rides. Like, she has been on multiple Disney rides.
I want to do that so bad. I want to take Sage so bad. That sounds so fun.
Yeah, her favorite ride, I'll never forget, was the Little Mermaid, because you just sit in this little moving bubble chair and it's nothing jostling or crazy. It's just looking at all the lights and the music and the different figures, and that, I'll never forget that. And that's the reason her second birthday theme was mermaids in like the ocean and stuff, because of that experience.
How do they do that when you're accommodating all of this equipment onto a ride? Does it just go on with her and they're like, all right, yeah, just get on?
Yeah, so there's obviously certain rides she can't go on. They will tell you what she can go on. So before you get in the park, or when you get in the park, you go and get a little sticker so her wheelchair can be pushed through certain lines. So like we don't have to wait in some of the long lines. They'll kind of take us through a wheelchair access place.
So is it like a fast pass? Or because I've heard a lot of people say, oh, if you have a special needs child, they'll give you a fast pass. But is it something separate?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds bad because, you know, obviously we're not using her to get through those long lines.
I think it's okay if we have all this equipment and all these things that we have to accommodate. It's okay if we get to skip the line. It's okay if we get the best parking in the handicap spots. We can take that win. It's okay. Like, it's okay to take the win because there are enough times that we have the hardest situation of anybody in the room because we can't just throw a diaper bag over our shoulder. I'll take the handicap spot. Thank you. I'll skip the line. Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. But yeah, that's just basically how it is. We go up and they kind of slip us in and I just bring her section and we hold her and her feeding pump is in a little backpack. So that's just, you know, you mine the tubes and you just go in. And sometimes I don't even bring her suction because, you know, if it's quick enough, she just doesn't even need it.
So did she enjoy it more the first time or the second time?
I will for sure say the first time. The second time she was teething very badly. So she was struggling, but it's okay. We were only there for a couple hours and we still had some fun times with her. So
did you take extra people with you or how did you feel like you needed extra help?
The first time, yes. Because we also had two foster boys with us the first time. And it was before Nora. So we had Maggie and my son and then our two foster boys. So we did bring an extra person. But now we just, I don't know, my husband and I have this down to a science and we do it masterfully. Like, we just do it.
I think it's incredible that you still had foster children even after you had Maggie. Like, that's awesome. That speaks volumes to, I guess, your ability to take on things.
Were those the same two from when she was born?
Definitely not. Those, the first two after she was born, we did have to let them go only because we had no idea what right. would happen with Maggie after she was born. We were just kind of really just taking it one day at a time. But when she needed that trach surgery is when we kind of had to step back from foster care. So yeah, the boys that we took with us to Disneyland, they were older, they were brothers and such a good experience with them. We had them for about 6 months. And I truly believe that, like I've said before, God is in the details of these kinds of things because I'm not sure if you guys are aware of Maggie's journey, GI journey before she got her GJ surgery. She was very, very, very sick and we almost lost her then. This was last year, January. And the boys ended up being able to be reunited with a family member. And it happened literally. We got the call very unexpectedly. We got the call the day before Maggie was hospitalized. So it's like, it just felt really good to know that God was guiding this because it wasn't one of those situations where we just had to cut it off once again, like we did with our first placement of children. They actually got to, it just was planned perfectly. But yeah, the day before Maggie was hospitalized, this is when it happened. So
do you have foster kids now still or no? I'm very intrigued. I think it's amazing.
No, yeah. I mean, people ask me, people think we're crazy. Maybe we are, but I have three adopted siblings who were first fosters because my parents used to foster. So that's kind of where it came from. My husband and I always knew that that's something we wanted to do. But no, I mean, after that experience, it was one of those things where I had to look back and say to myself, I can't do all of this. Even though I want to and I wish I could, I just can't. And I need to prioritize my children now and just leave it at that. So,
however, I did also just remember that you also had a family from Ukraine stay with you for a little bit.
Yes.
You have such a big heart. Clearly, you have such a big heart and you have so much passion to pour into the world, basically. And I just think that's wonderful. And I think a lot of people who might be listening to this, they need to hear that. Like, they need to hear that your life doesn't stop and end if you have a kid with medical needs and you choose to sustain their life and keep them as a part of your life, it doesn't mean that that's the only aspect of your life that ever exists from then on forward. You can have all these other parts of your life and you can still live a very full life with your child and give them a very full life too. And so I just think it's great. I want to talk about all that.
Yeah, I'll never call myself a saint. I get this from my mother. My mother taught me a lot about service because she just naturally does that and has done it for many, many years. And I guess it just came down to we served within our limits. So bringing foster children into our home, you know, that we were capable of that because we have extra bedrooms and we knew that that was within our limits. And we have a large basement. So when this family was brought to our attention that they needed a place to stay for a little bit, we said to ourselves, you know, this is within our limits. Even though Maggie, this was like only maybe 2 or 3 months after she was hospitalized, but she was so much healthier and fully recovered. Yeah, we did that for about a month is when we housed that family from Ukraine. And we were able to use social media platform to have people participate in furnishing their apartment. But yeah, they live in their own apartment now and are thriving here. And it was a good experience to be a part of that.
If I could physically hug you right now, I would just like melt. And I love you for this because like she said, you go through the emotional roller coaster in the beginning of the diagnosis that, and it might sound crazy or it might sound mean or it might sound weird or it might sound wrong, but you wonder, like, what is my life going to look like? Mm-hmm. Is all of these things that I enjoy doing or all of these things that I want to do now just poof? Or what does that look like? You know? And so you wrestle with that too. And so I think it's amazing for you to let people know, no, you can still go to Disneyland. You can still serve other people. You can still live your life. You just have a child who has some extra fancy equipment. That's it.
In order to attempt not to get overwhelmed whenever you know, have all these kind of different moving parts in your life, what do you do to try not to get overwhelmed? Are you somebody who has to write everything down? Do you have an amazing planner app or a physical planner? Or like, what do you do to keep this full life and not be overwhelmed by it?
Yeah. So I like to call myself the queen of multitasking. I'm very good at multitasking, but I feel like that's a trait that naturally moms have to learn, and we learn it really yes. good. How else are we surviving while taking care of little children? You know, right. We are multitasking.
Trying to breastfeed with one arm, suction sage with the other hand. Her pulse ox is alarming. I'm evaluating her respiratory status while suctioning her. Like, yeah.
But this has been a big battle for me, though. Something that's taken me a long time to learn. Like I said before, self-care can look so different for everybody. And it's taken me a long time to see what that means for me. And so, like I said, at the beginning of this year, I just had to make some huge changes. I had to cut some things out and tell myself, you know, I'm not being selfish. I'm just trying to prioritize my mental health because I deserve that. You know, like, I feel like there's such a, I'm not even sure what to call it, but as a medical mom, I feel like there's such a thing, a presence on social media where if you're a medical parent, your life is insane and you're stressed all the time and you're so overwhelmed and it's so crazy. And I feel like that can be really hard, especially for new parents who get this diagnosis, to see that and think that they can do that. And it can come off as so negative. And so while that may be true, I feel like it's so important for us to really find what we need. So like I talked about before, the babysitter thing, I will never ever leave my children overnight with anyone other than my husband because there's just nobody that I trust. My husband and I have started taking solo trips. You know, we've always, like before we had children, we used to travel all the time. We love traveling different countries and whatnot. We haven't been able to do that anymore. So we have come to the conclusion, you know what? We just, if we want to still do what we love, we got to do it separately. And I've started seeing a therapist and been working through some of those hard, unresolved PTSD as a medical mom and the things I had to go through. And that's been so good for me. And I've been prioritizing my health. I've been seeing my doctor regularly. I'm making sure that I'm taking care of me so that I can be the best that I can be for my children, because I'm also doing that for them so that they can have a happy mom. And I feel like once you come to that knowledge that you deserve that, it just changes everything. And when I say this, I'm not going to claim that I'm perfect at it, because there are so many days where I just don't want to do anything, and it's hard to maintain that good mindset. But when I do, I am able to see the difference that it makes, and it is a good difference.
I love that you mentioned that you go see a therapist, because I do too. A lot of people, I think, are afraid to admit that, or to admit that could be a benefit to them. I know I needed it. There was a lot of trauma in everything with Evelyn's life in the beginning that I had to process. And so I love that you're just like, yeah, I see a counselor now, you know, hey. So I second that. If that is where you are really struggling mentally and emotionally, go seek a counselor, because that was like a total game changer for me specifically when it came to my mental health. And so thank you for sharing that.
I need to get into therapy.
Do it.
I do.
It's so good.
I'm not currently in therapy.
This is my thing. You know, we are so busy. I had to figure out, like, how could I possibly fit in one more thing? But you might be surprised if you can take an hour to, I don't know, cook dinner and get your kids ready for bed, or take an hour to take the laundry out and put it in the wash or whatever, then you can take a simple hour of the day to see a therapist. I just needed that perspective, and it's like totally possible.
So I want to know, because I personally didn't really start to try to serve other people. I was really weird, and I was so prideful and didn't really let people serve me either during that period, because for the first year of her life where she felt so fragile, we had a lot of hard boundaries. Not that we tried to hermit her, but we limited our personal access to germs. And now we're like a year and a half into this, and it's like, you know what? We can't keep having these hard lines. And so we've been a little more involved in church and in serving other people. So how does Maggie's health impact any decision that you make of things that you want to take on or things that you want to do for other people? Does that ever play a role into you taking on other things? Because you've mentioned a handful of times that you won't work outside of your capacity. But is Maggie's health ever a consideration into that decision?
Naturally, yes. This is actually a really hard question, because it's another one of those things that I've had to give myself grace for. Because number one, it's almost impossible to sometimes avoid germs, no matter how careful you are, or no matter what you do and things you do to prepare it. Like, sometimes it happens inevitably. And I think first taking away that guilt that it's your fault that it happened is like key, especially with having other children, because my son goes to school and he's around other kids, and he usually was the one bringing the germs home. And I, at first, you know, that would cause me so much anxiety, but it was one of those things that I really had to take time to give myself grace and say that, you know, there's something, I can't do it all. I can't avoid it all. And I just have to be okay with this. And thankfully, Maggie usually shows a lot of resilience during when she's sick. Although it can be so scary and dangerous for so many of our kids. It's just one of those things that, like, is kind of like a gray area.
I just kind of want to chime in. This might be a controversial opinion. Well, not necessarily controversial, but I'm just sure everybody has their own opinion on it. So I just want to disclaim that. But I've always kind of tried to take the approach with Sage that, within reason, of course, I'm not going to be like, oh, you have the flu, no problem, we're just going to bring Sage over anyways. Like, of course, within reason. But I've always felt like Sage has had to overcome a lot to still be here today. She's had to go through a lot, especially early in her life, to be here today. And she didn't go through all of that to only see the four walls of her house. She went through all of that so she can live her life. And of course, like I said, within reason, I've just always felt like exactly what you're saying. Like, germs are a part of life. Unfortunately, we can't avoid them, but I want her to experience fullness of life. And so that's kind of how I've always felt about it. And I'm sure there are going to be people that completely disagree with me, and that's fine. But that's how I've kind of always felt about it, is like, we can't avoid germs altogether, but I want you to live your fullest possible life. And so that means at times that we're naturally taking risks, I guess.
The question itself was because I know that, like, in the beginning, I could say that I wanted her to live life all day long. And then when I sat there and analyzed how many days I probably spent anxious in the decisions that I made. And like, I know that our children's days are numbered, right? Like everybody else's under the sun. And so it was really hard to want to serve because I didn't want to bring those things back to Evelyn. And I don't know, at somewhere down the road, it just finally clicked. And I was like, oh, I really was kind of living a little fearful. And then we were just so busy with all of the appointments in the first year of life that it felt like we never really got to live, where now we will go to somebody's house for the weekend, or we will go serve at the church and have someone sit with Evelyn so that if she's sick or something like that. And so we're a little more bolder, I can say, now than we were in the beginning.
Yeah. And I feel like that's a totally normal thing for us as well. We're so, that first year is usually the hardest with our kids because it's when you're just discovering everything and experiencing everything for the first time. And for us, or for me, it was also in the middle of COVID. So maybe that made it easier in a way because we weren't going anywhere anyways.
And everybody was so cognizant about, like, if they have any, if they sniffle wrong, they're like, yeah, I got a quarantine. You know, no, nobody was wanting to take any chances in 2020 and, you know, early 21.
First year of life with our children is hard. And you're trying to figure out your boundaries. You're trying to figure out your limitations. You're trying to figure out how to take care of your child. You know, it's not just, oh, here's all this fancy equipment. No, they are a little more sensitive. They do require a little more help. But what does that look like? You know, what extra help do they need? And I know for us, it was a very long process to figure out Evelyn's respiratory. Little did we know a deep suction catheter was going to be such a game changer. But, you know, we didn't know that at the time. And so as we've gotten more knowledgeable and more of a footing on how to take care of her, I feel like now we're like, oh yeah, it's okay, she's sick. And just the other day, my mother-in-law was watching Evelyn and she's like, I don't know how you guys do this all the time.
I think part of it too is just learning your child specifically. Like, that just takes time to learn their cues and their quirks. And I honestly think that some of Sage's first illness hospitalizations, whenever she was about a year old, we probably could have avoided those if I knew then what I know now about her and her quirks. And that also plays into the things that we go and do. Like, I know personally that Sage gets very affected by the heat. And so early in her life, you know, we would go and do things. But now, like, I'm not going to take her to the zoo if it's over 80 degrees outside because she's going to be desatting, needing oxygen, things like that, because that's just her quirk. That's how she rolls. I can't tell you why, but that's just what she does. And so even just knowing those little things about her affects, like, how we go and live our life and make sure that we have, like, the best experiences possible and give her the best experience because we know those little quirks about her.
I think the beautiful thing about that, and as medical parents and having to really change and adapt to our child's needs, you learn to find joy in creating memories in those unique ways. Like, they almost mean more to you. Like, those small memories mean more to you than versus like a neurotypical family that would think that they have to go and do all these things and go on vacations, whatever, to like bond with their family. It looks differently for us because we do what we are capable of within our limits. And I think that's really beautiful. So
no, I totally agree with that. I was going to ask you, Charity, circling back to how you went to Disney, because Emma mentioned that Sage, like, does not handle the heat. And Evelyn, it is above 80 degrees. She will projectile vomit. And it is not her thing. She hates the heat. So does Maggie have that sort of heat sensitivity too, just out of pure curiosity?
She does not, but she does have, she chronically sweats. So she gets warmer than, you know, a typical child would quicker, but we come prepared. Like, we have fans, we have visors, she has her own sunglasses. I mean, like, there are ways of avoiding it and making it work. And so, thankfully, I had no idea that that's what happens for your children. That's that must be really hard, because Maggie definitely, I would not say that it affects her that much. Definitely not.
Yeah, and we live in Texas, so imagine. So it kind of limits where we can go. But it goes back to, we do find a lot of joy and happiness in the small little memories that we can make. And we have to get creative, you know? Like, if we want to expose her to something, we have to take into account the heat factor.
But it's also helped us learn that Sage likes to be in the pool. And so whenever it's hot outside, we like to take her swimming because she does like to be in the water and kick her legs in the water and stuff. So once you learn those quirks about your kid and you learn kind of how to adapt, that also helps you live life to the fullest. And I think kind of what I'm kind of taking away from this whole conversation, at least, is the first year is the hardest because you know the least about your child. You're the most overwhelmed by your circumstances. And with time, it gets better and you can do more and you feel more confident and more prepared to.
So before we let you go, obviously we want you to plug your social media one more time in case somebody missed the first segment of our mini series with you. But let us know what's next with you guys. You guys are living a very fun and wondrous, adventurous life. You guys are serving, you guys are living, you know, and I think a lot of parents want to do that and know that it's okay to do that. So what's next for you guys?
So our social media first is Nelson Family Feet, F-E-A-T. You can find us there on Instagram. What is next? That's a great question. I would say the biggest thing is Maggie turns 3 years old, which is, my gosh, it is huge. We're so excited. We're naturally having a gigantic birthday party because she deserves that and more. We're also waiting on her Make-A-Wish to come through. It's been, you know, a lot of ups and downs with that, funny enough. A lot of advocating simply because of her needs. But we're excited for that to come to a conclusion to see what happens with that. We are taking it one day at a time and really trying to prioritize, my husband and I, our mental, physical health this year while taking care of our children. And it's just, yeah, it's the year where we focus more on ourselves and make sure that we're taken care of too. So who knows what'll happen. I'm sure tomorrow I'll tell you something different, but right now that's what it is today.
Does Nevada have a program? Like in Texas, we have ECI, which is early childhood intervention, and that goes up to 3 years old. And then once your child turns three, they can start getting school-based services and your child can go to preschool. Does Nevada have anything like that? And if yes, do you plan to send Maggie to school or what?
As far as I know, yes. I think it was briefly mentioned to me once that that is possible. However, I don't think she's ready for it. That's something that we would probably consider next year. I can't, at her size and where she's at right now, where we're still kind of trying to figure out like diagnosis and certain things, I just don't think I can let her go to a preschool unless they come in the house and do it. But even then, I don't even think she would tolerate it. I would reconnect with that next year and see if maybe she's ready for it next year, but definitely not this year.
Thanks for joining us on one of our table topics of things. And I hope that when somebody listens, they're able to be really inspired and a little more hopeful that this diagnosis doesn't necessarily mean an end to their life and the things that they love and things that they do, that they can still have all of that. It's just a big learning curve. And I'm so glad that you guys have some really fun things to look forward to. And if you guys want to keep up with Charity and Maggie, you can find them on Instagram. Highly recommend it because she's insanely adorable. And we will see you guys next week. If you're a family in need of financial assistance or support while navigating the diagnosis of trisomy 18 or 13, please find us at extratolove.org or on social media under the same name. If you want to sponsor an episode, please reach out to info@extratolove.org.
Day extra.